And call the Judiciary Committee meeting together. Present, we have Senator Dyson, Senator McGuire, Senator Coghill. One is out of town and one is in another committee meeting. If Senator Olson said to me if he needed to be here, you know, we could call on him, but he has two committees going on simultaneously. So I think today, because we're going to do public testimony, you know, he can get the benefit of the public testimony by watching it or listening to it. Today, I'm going to do with two bills today. And Senate Bill 22 for the members' consideration will be held over till tomorrow because there's an amendment that is being worked on that we'll take a look at. And we have a drafted amended version of Senate Bill 22 that we'll bring over tomorrow. And then we'll bring Senate Bill 56 up. Senator Dyson, my intention is to bring that up sometime around 2:30 to 2:40, so in about an hour. And that'll give you a chance to introduce it to us. We have before us Senate Bill 49. We're going to have public testimony today. We have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We got 12 people online, and we have a group from Planned Parenthood that wants to come and speak to it. To be fair, Senate Bill 49, I took the whole section last time, so I wanted to give ample time for people to either come and respond, or give their public testimony. And so what I wanted to do, and for those of you online, my intention was to go ahead and let Planned Parenthood go through their slide presentation. And what I can do is if there's a time constraint, as soon as they're done, then I will ask you about time constraint. The Planned Parenthood people are here. They have a presentation. I wanted to go ahead and get that on. And then I will go to public testimony. We'll take those as rapidly as we can and give Planned Parenthood maybe a chance to come in for further questions at the end. My intention is in about an hour to go ahead. We have one other bill to introduce to the committee. So right now I got Jennifer Allen and Laura, is it Espine?
Einstein.
I knew I was going to rest that. But why don't you come on up and, I was off. I have many, many other people here in the committee to testify, in the committee room to testify. So so that means we have lots of testimony to get with the program here. So we will try to move along as rapidly as we can. Before us, we have Jennifer and Laura. Why don't you introduce yourself for the record and then give us your testimony.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jennifer Allen, and I am the Director of Public Policy for Planned Parenthood Votes Northwest. With me is my colleague, Laura Einstein, who is Chief Legal Counsel for Planned Parenthood of the Great Northwest. We appreciate the chance to speak to you today and do want to ask you to respectfully to oppose Senate Bill 49. We ask you this because we believe that that is what is necessary to protect the freedom and privacy of all Alaska women, no matter their income. And that's what's necessary to make sure that they can make their own pregnancy decisions in consultation with their doctor. I want to say that we tell you just why we're here to testify today. We are uniquely qualified to speak to this bill. We are a healthcare provider whose mission is to ensure access to high-quality reproductive health care for all. At our 5 health centers in Alaska, the majority of the over 7,000 Alaskans that we serve each year are low-income people. The vast majority of our services focus on prevention. We do cancer screenings, we do birth control, we do screening for sexually transmitted infections, including HIV, and we are committed to providing preventive services to ensure that we are supporting women and men in planning and spacing the pregnancies that they have. And when a woman makes the very personal and often complex decision to end a pregnancy, we are proud to be a place where we provide that safe and legal care for the woman. I skipped a slide a little bit. There's a little bit more about who we are. So Why do we ask you to oppose Senate Bill 49? First, this bill puts women's health at risk. This bill may cause women to deter or delay their, seeking abortion services, which increases the chances of them continuing a health-threatening pregnancy or pushes their abortion into the second trimester. Second, pregnancy decisions should be made by women and their doctors. We don't turn to government for advice about other medical care, and Senate Bill 49 puts politicians right in between women and their doctors. Doctors, not government, are the right ones to decide what's medically necessary, as happens today. Finally, the Supreme Court has already spoken on this issue. The Constitution requires that women's pregnancy decisions, whether to terminate or to carry to term, are given equal protection under the law, and that means abortion services must be provided to low-income women so their pregnancy choices are not restricted by their economic status. In addition, the definition of medically necessary may not be further limited without discrimination against women who rely on the government for health care. This really is a simple matter of fairness. So to speak more to the legal aspects of this, because I think that is at issue here, my colleague Laura Einstein.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Coghill, and members of the committee for inviting us to come to Juneau today on this absolutely splendid afternoon. Today I want to talk about why this bill is not needed, why it is not constitutional given the holdings in the 2001 decision in the state of Alaska versus Planned Parenthood, and third, how similar efforts to impose a more stringent test for Medicaid coverage of abortions than is required of other procedures have failed. So according to the sponsor statement, this bill is needed because the term medically necessary abortion has, quote, acquired a constitutional component of unknown scope. And respectfully, we disagree with this. First, the Medicaid rules contain a definition of medically necessary that is used for virtually all services covered by Medicaid. That definition focuses on physician standards of practice and trusts Alaska physicians to evaluate their patients' needs and provide appropriate care. Second, the Supreme Court of the United States has articulated a definition that is helpful for physicians in determining medical necessity. The Supreme Court stated that whether an abortion is necessary is a professional judgment that may be exercised in the light of all factors, physical, emotional, psychological, familial, age, all relevant to the well-being of the patient. All these factors relate to health. This allows the attending physician the room he needs to make the best medical judgment. Third, the Alaska courts have defined medically necessary for abortions. In the Medicaid funding litigation in 2001, the Superior Court, the trial court, defined medically necessary in its order compelling the state to start paying for medically necessary abortions. The court stated that an abortion is deemed medically necessary if it prevents the death or disability of a woman or to ameliorate a condition harmful to the woman's physical or psychological health. This order and the definition of medically necessary in the order were part of the Supreme Court's record, and when the Supreme Court affirmed the trial court, it likewise effectively affirmed that definition. As I say, it's a definition that has been helpful to physicians at Planned Parenthood in determining whether an abortion is medically necessary. So for these reasons, we don't need this bill. The Alaska courts and the Medicaid rules already provide the parameters for determining what's a medically necessary abortion. But in addition, the Supreme Court in the state of Alaska versus Planned Parenthood made several key findings that also prove this bill is not constitutional. First, the way the court framed the issue makes it fully relevant to Senate Bill 49. The courts framed the issue as the protection of procreative choice, that meaning continuing or terminating pregnancy, the protection of either procreative choice from discriminatory governmental treatment. So Senate Bill 49 is discriminatory governmental treatment of abortion, which is a fundamental right in Alaska, because it requires such a high bar, different from any other service covered by Medicaid, before Medicaid will pay for an abortion. The Supreme Court in the Medicaid funding case also made clear that any rule involving a fundamental right, as this bill does, must be neutral, meaning that a definition cannot be based on the fact that some people oppose abortion or favor continuation of pregnancy. So therefore, the court held, when the state government seeks to provide medical care for the poor, it has an obligation to do so in a neutral manner so as not to infringe upon the constitutional rights of our citizens. The state may not use criteria which discriminatorily burden the exercise of a fundamental right. So Senate Bill 49 isn't a neutral bill because it contains a definition of medically necessary that is beyond the standards applied for other Medicaid services. It favors continuing a pregnancy over termination. That makes it not a neutral bill. Next, importantly, the court framed the equal protection violation that occurs when a woman who terminates her pregnancy is treated differently and more adversely compared to the woman who continues her pregnancy. So the court stated, a woman who carries her pregnancy to term and a woman who terminates her pregnancy exercise the same fundamental right to reproductive choice. Alaska's Equal Protection Clause does not permit governmental discrimination against either woman. Both must be granted access to state health care under the same terms as any similarly situated person. So the equal protection analysis in the 2001 decision is fully applicable to Senate Bill 49. Senate Bill 49, in effect, is governmental discrimination because it imposes a more onerous definition of medically necessary on abortion that's not required for the treatment of pregnancy. Finally, in any kind of constitutional challenge, it will be up to the state of Alaska, if there was litigation over a bill, to prove that there's a compelling need for this definition. So the sponsor statement justifies the bill as filling a gap. Now, we don't concede there is a gap, as I explained earlier, but leaving that aside, what matters is the content of the definition. And the statement doesn't explain why this particular definition is necessary. To us, it seems obvious that the only possible justification is to limit women's access to abortions, and that's not permitted by the Alaska Constitution. So Senate Bill 49 isn't the first attempt by the legislature or executive branch to narrowly define medically necessary for abortions. Since 2001, there have been four attempts to craft a bill or a rule that would limit the abortions that Medicaid would have to pay for. In 2002, Senate Bill 364, that bill sought to define medically necessary almost exactly as does Senate Bill 49. The Attorney General's office evaluated that bill. The Attorney General's office often weighs in, along with legislative counsel, in a nonpartisan way. And they wrote that Senate Bill 364 would likely be found unconstitutional and result in costly litigation. Again, in 2010 and in 2012, legislative counsel were asked about the power of the legislature to limit the definition of medically necessary. Each time, legislative counsel stated, if the Supreme Court adheres to its findings in State of Alaska versus Planned Parenthood, the state would not be able to burden the right of abortion services unless the same burden is placed on medical services to continue a pregnancy. And in the absence of comparable burdens on continuation of a pregnancy, the state cannot burden the right to abortion services. That same opinion of legislative counsel fully applies to Senate Bill 49. Finally, I note that in 2012, earlier last year, After careful consideration and a full airing of views through the regulatory process, the Department of Health and Human Services, Health and Social Services added a certification process for physicians, but left the determination of whether an abortion is medically necessary in the purview of the physician, and this is where it should be. We urge this committee to follow the dictates of the agency whose expertise is paramount in determining these kinds of issues, and to let the current status remain and to allow us to adhere to the current rule. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you. If you don't mind, I'll go ahead and do a couple of questions.
Sure.
Now, and then we'll go into public testimony. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. I have two questions. And I don't intend for them to be pejorative, although we disagree. You said that I understood you to say that we are required for the protection of procreation rights. And it seemed to me the logical implication was that, I think somewhere you said, you know, for virtually any reason. And does that mean that you all are okay with abortion being used for after-the-fact birth control?
I always shy away from the suggestion that a woman's decision to have an abortion is anything other than a very complex decision with many, many factors. And the idea that a woman, quote unquote, uses an abortion for birth control is
it's repulsive.
I don't judge any woman, and at Planned Parenthood, we, as a matter of our own personal policy and beliefs, we never judge any woman. Her life could be very complicated. She may have any kind of, there may be any number of reasons why she makes her decisions. So to reduce it to that kind of statement is just not something that I'm capable of responding to.
And I think, Senator, that Laura and I don't work in our, right in our health centers, but I think what our health center staff would tell you is that that's just not the reality of what we see. We can't, as Laura said, we can't walk in women's shoes. It's a very deeply personal and often very complex decision that women make, and a lot of factors go into it. We don't know what's going on for a woman.
And I appreciate what you've said.
Just for what it's worth, identify yourself, because the people recording it.
Oh.
I have to, so the last person speaking was Jennifer Allen, and previously was Laura Enstein.
Yeah, and forgive me for jumping in.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate how carefully you avoided answering the question, and I don't blame you. But indeed, if a woman came to one of the clinics and said, I've changed my mind, you know, I don't want to continue this pregnancy, would you turn her away? Or would she be turned away?
I'm sorry. This is Laura Enstein. If she changed her mind and she wanted to continue the pregnancy?
Negative. She wanted to have to terminate the pregnancy. It was a wanted child, you know, and her circumstance had changed, so she decided she did not want to continue that pregnancy. Which, under your principles and so on, would you serve her?
So, Senator, this is Jennifer Allen, and I think I would say that, first of all, we are here to support women in exercising their safe and legal right to make whatever pregnancy decision is right for them, including abortion, if that's
sure.
the right decision for them. And secondly, I mean, I can't answer that question very
okay.
well, because we just can't walk in her shoes. We don't know why a woman
right.
might have changed her
I got
mind.
It. And just two quick follow-ups. Yeah, thank you. I think you said that all medical procedures should, in essence, have a comparable medical screening process. You know, if you're going to have some decision for deciding whether or not to go forward, and that those all ought to be equal or comparable. Did I understand that?
Well, what I said was the Alaska Supreme Court has said that you can't apply different, more adverse burdens on a woman who decides to terminate a pregnancy compared to a woman who decides to continue a pregnancy. And so that if you had this kind of standards for defining medically necessary for a coverage of abortion, then those kinds of standards, and here I'm quoting legislative counsel, those kinds of standards
okay.
would be
all right, I got it.
Required for pregnancy.
How would you all define an elective abortion as opposed to, you know, a medical necessity?
This is Laura Einstein. I don't, with all due respect, and I don't mean this glibly, I don't know what an elective abortion is. I don't know what an elective pregnancy is. I think that women can get in a situation where they have a medical condition of pregnancy, and for many reasons related to health, may decide that their decision and the best thing for them is to have an abortion.
Yep.
Now, I understand that there is this concept of elective abortion, but we just don't really know what that means.
Yeah, and if I may, and it appears to me from the Hyde Amendment that we're directed to not pay for them. And respectfully, you're kind of I won't say waffling or obfuscating on it, makes it clear that in your mind there is no elective or medical necessary. It's all on some kind of a continuum. But here's a question for you as kind of a legal scholar. At what point does a right convey the necessity of others to pay for it, and particularly for whom it's morally repugnant? The Runaway Slave Act was a great example. You know, people were forced to pay for their law enforcement courts to send escaped slaves back. And we almost fought a war. I mean, that was seminal. And it was the same issue of being forced to pay for that which is morally repugnant.
I will answer that, but I want to add one point to the question. This is Laura Einstein. I want to add one point to your previous question, which is that the determination of medically necessary will be made by a physician. I can sit here and give you my legal policy argument, but in the end, the physician will be the one who is the one who, in Alaska, will sign a certificate attesting that he or she believed that the woman's health was a factor and important and had and therefore justified the state to pay for that service, just as the state, that physician could ask the state to pay for other services. What in the answer to your other question is was actually also answered by the Supreme Court in State of Alaska versus Planned Parenthood, and the court said, look, the state doesn't have to pay for anything, but once it commits to paying for a program like healthcare for low-income citizens, then it must do so in a neutral and non-discriminatory way. And so that's the issue. So the state has decided as a matter of policy it's going to have this Medicaid program. And that's a good thing. But when it does that, then it cannot...
I got it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And really,
and
I tend to go on.
And what's what we're trying to answer is what the term medically necessary means. And so, Senator,
McGuire.
That's fine.
I had a question
it's
as well.
It's a long day already.
It's a long day.
Yeah. It's a beautiful day. Welcome to Gino. Thank you for being here and testifying. Are there instances at Planned Parenthood that you're aware of where a woman has been denied coverage or a Medicaid-paid abortion based on her inability to qualify for it as medically necessary? Are there any instances like that that you know of where a woman is turned away?
And identify yourself.
Yes. This is Jennifer Allen, and I'm not aware of that, but I'm not involved in our billing process, and I'm not sure that Laura is either. I'm not sure that we would know the answer to that question.
I think I can answer that. If the physician certified that it was medically necessary, Medicaid will pay for it. Now, whether there have been situations where a physician has decided that it isn't is not something we would know about. So, and that would, the claim would not be submitted to Medicaid.
Okay, and just if I might follow up, I'm trying to get a better view into Planned Parenthood services and how you support and relate to pregnant women that come in and are looking at what they would like to do. Mm-hmm. And I guess what I want to know is sort of what's happening now and what would happen if this bill passed, if you did have a circumstance where it was now a more narrow definition of medical necessity, and if the sponsor's intent comes true, then fewer abortions would be funded and more would be denied based on the fact that they were not, quote, medically necessary.
So it's not necessarily true. It would be who pays for it. Okay. It would not be denied. It would be who pays for it.
Okay. And so my question is, I'm trying to understand how that process is, and then where, what advice do you give that woman, and where does she go next? What are the other sort of safety nets, if you will, both for caring to term and for termination? What do we, where do we send these women in Alaska? The Medicaid part of it is the financial qualification, but certainly you've got a whole life here. And I'm wondering how you advise and where you send them and who else comes into the mix.
So if a woman comes to Planned Parenthood and is knows she's pregnant, or she comes in and has a pregnancy test and determines she's pregnant, no abortion is performed without her undergoing an education process so she understands all her options. Now, many women call Planned Parenthood having made up their mind, but even then they go through an education process, and every time a patient, every woman who comes through our door, we ask questions to determine she is competent, meaning that she is confident in her decision. It's her decision. No one is asking or forcing her to do that or putting pressure on her to do that. Frankly, if this bill was passed, in using the language in this bill, very, very few women would qualify for coverage under Medicaid. And if that happened, I don't know, you know, some of them might be able to pull together some money, maybe, but it might take longer. And remember, in Alaska, there are no physicians right now who perform second trimester abortions, which means that any woman past 14 weeks is going to have to fly to Washington State, which means that much more money that she would have to raise to have that procedure, which is, you know, so those are, I mean, that would be the effect of this bill, that the vast majority of women who are otherwise qualified for Medicaid would not get coverage under Medicaid.
And I'm gonna,
they would not meet the standard.
One more by the senator. Cognizant of the time, we've got probably about 18 people or more signed up.
Okay. And I understand that. I appreciate it. But, I mean, these are the people who are seeing Alaskan women who are in these circumstances. And so I apologize for taking time. But I think it's important that we have a view into what actually happens and not speculate about it or hyperbolize, but that we know actually what happens. And so with that, I have two more questions, if
sure.
you might.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. So my next question is then, you made a statement just now, and it's an interesting one. You said you thought almost no abortions would qualify. And when you say that, can you refer me to the part of the definition today that most poor women in Alaska are able to qualify for abortions under the state law now? In other words, what aspects of the medical necessity standard are most abortions performed under current law?
Because the current standard, as I said, we have provided our physicians with the language from the court decisions, which is to ameliorate a condition harmful to a woman's physical or psychological health. So you have the standard of harmful, whereas in Senate Bill 49, you're talking about a serious risk to the life or health, which means either death or impairment of a major bodily function because of, of essentially pre-existing conditions affecting, one or another bodily function. So that's an extremely high bar to, most people aren't that sick, and most people don't get that sick in a pregnancy. That's just that's just a fact. I don't have statistics about that, but we know that to be true.
So, and this is Jennifer Allen. Furthermore, I would say that, in fact, that speaks to why the definition is one of a physician determining medical necessity. It wouldn't be possible to create a fully exhaustive list of all of the conditions that might result in harm to a woman's life or health. And therefore, we leave that up to folks who are medically trained, medically schooled and trained. That's why a more general medical necessity certification by a doctor is the appropriate standard here in our view.
Okay, last question, then I'm done. And this is a difficult one, so I'm going to try to ask it delicately. And I'm going to ask it of the physicians that are testifying today, too. How often does Planned Parenthood, or if at all, see women who have attempted to abort themselves and who then come to your clinic to seek treatment from one of your providers?
Well, I've been with Planned Parenthood, my affiliate, for 5 years, and if that's happened, I haven't been told it had happened, and I think I probably would have been.
Great. And I ask that just because I want the chairman to think about something that occurred to me over the weekend. And it's just a thought I want to put out there, which is that my father was in the public health service, took care of women during the time when abortion was illegal in the country. And one of the things that they saw a lot were women that would come in after they had been in a back alley abortion circumstance or attempted to abort themselves. And those are some of the more common medical circumstances. And I just want to say something that can happen sometimes, unintended consequences, that if you narrow this definition down and a woman didn't feel she had the ability to have coverage for an abortion that she had set her sights on, for whatever the reasons are, whether we disagree with it or not, would she attempt to do it on her own? And I just say, and then would that result in a medical situation that would allow her to then qualify, in a complete irony? So I just say that for us to think about. Okay.
All right. I've got probably 40 minutes that I have a whole group of people that would like to testify. So be prepared. I might ask you to come on back, but I'm going to go ahead and get people online who have called in to go ahead and give their testimony, and thank you for allowing us to have the dialogue. There are many, many other things that I think need to come to the table, but the equality issue, I think equal treatment, I think we gave a pretty good answer to. We disagree on that, but even the Hyde Amendment shows, for example, on the national level, a level of service. And the fact that we don't have unlimited health care for Alaskans generally shows that there are going to be limitations. So I think the Supreme Court left open to us the difference between trying to figure out the difference between an elective and a medically necessary. And they gave us some pretty good criteria that even they showed there was some pretty significant guidelines to follow, which we're trying to follow very closely. Only one that we'll probably push up against is kind of the the emotional side of it, which we will debate about, obviously. But thank you for coming before us and testifying.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate the thoughtful testimony, and there's much more to discuss, no doubt about it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. What I'd like to do at this point is I'd like to go ahead and give as many people an opportunity to speak in as possible. And I'm trying to take them in the order in which they called in. But before I get too far, I'm remiss. We have two senators sitting with us, Senator Betty Davis and Senator Georgiana Lincoln. Welcome to our committee. Thank you for coming to the committee. I appreciate that. And welcome to Juneau. So I'm going to go down the list, and what I'd like to do is limit it, if I can, to 2 minutes, unless we just cannot get that done. I'm going to push on. And Myrtle Goring in Anchorage, are you there, and can you testify?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you for identify yourself and give us your testimony. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Myrtle Goring. I live in Senate District L. I'm here today to urge the Senate Judiciary Committee to vote no and oppose Senate Bill 49. I know that you don't very often hear testimony on this type of legislation from people in my age group. I'm 9 days short of my 90th birthday on March 14th, and I'm a proud and loving mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother. Perhaps my experience in bridging both a time of illegal back-alley abortions and life after Roe versus Wade will clarify my position. Illegal abortions, despite their risks, were often the only family planning for my generation of young married mothers whose families got too large too soon. Often there were serious consequences, even death. And only then could the family doctor, who could not be legally involved in the decision to abort or in the procedure, had to be called to clean up the damage. Do we want to go back to that? Today, the Alaska State Supreme Court has ruled that a woman's pregnancy decision made with her doctor's advice whether to terminate or to carry a pregnancy to term needs to be given equal protection under the law. I support this, not only for the health and well-being of the mothers, but also for the sake of the children involved. My 30-plus years as a teacher and guidance counselor in both the elementary and secondary grades had me interacting with hundreds of children and their families. It wasn't very hard to find the children with low self-esteem, sadness, explosive anger, destructiveness, and overall feelings of unwantedness. Unfortunately, my work with many of their mothers or caretakers confirmed this. The human and social cost of denying abortion rights is too high for all of us. We must continue to give women, along with their doctors, the freedom to plan their families with no interference from government. Thank you.
Thank you, Myrtle. Thank you for taking the time to come testify. Joni Clary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Joni Clary, and I live in Senate District L. I'm here today to urge the Senate Judiciary Committee to vote no and to oppose Senate Bill 49. I'm a social worker in private practice in Anchorage, and I've lived here for over 30 years, and I've worked in the field of child abuse and neglect for over 10 years. I believe that every child deserves the right to be born wanted and cared for. As the speakers from Planned Parenthood pointed out, abortion is still legal in this country, and I believe that Senate Bill 49 is just another attempt to chip away at a woman's right to choose this procedure. Medicaid now pays for. We've gone over what Medicaid pays for and the medically necessary components, so I won't repeat that part of it of what I was going to say, but I'd just like to reiterate that I believe that the legislature should not be getting involved in the personal and medical decisions that should be left to a woman and her doctor. And at a time when services to poor people are being eroded, passage of this bill would further harm poor women's ability to care for themselves and their families and make appropriate decisions in order to do that. And then I just have one comment. I couldn't tell which senator it was that was saying about his concern about should taxpayers be forced to pay for services that they find repugnant. And I just think that I believe that in a society that's ruled by law, many of us end up paying for services that we don't agree with. We might not agree with paying for certain wars or for certain government subsidies or for various other programs, but in this society, we have to go by what the law says. And so, again, I just urge you to oppose Senate Bill 49. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Joni. Appreciate you taking your time to testify. Is Alan Smith there?
Hi, this is Alan Smith. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Alan Smith, and I live in Senate District G. I agree with the previous comments, and I think that the bill second-guesses the professional judgment of medical providers to determine what is medically necessary. I don't think we need this bill. Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time to come out and testify. And appreciate you being brief, because that gives other people an opportunity to speak up. Donna Stark, are you there?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Donna Stark. I live in Senate District L, and I agree with all the previous testimony today. I would like to include information that I have gathered. In 2005, the Alaska legislature adopted a law that created the informed consent website that requires any woman seeking an abortion to verify that she has had access to the information and to assign an affidavit saying such. Alaska Statute 18.05.032 established this website and provides that the website contains objective, unbiased information that is reviewed and approved for medical accuracy by recognized obstetrical and gynecological specialists designated by the state medical board, and that it describes pregnancy, abortion, adoption, and includes the possible physical and psychological effects that have been associated with pregnancy, abortion, and adoption. On the website, under the heading Pregnancy Risk, the following information is there. Risk goes up as the pregnancy advances. In Alaska, the risk of dying from pregnancy is 7.4 per 100,000 live births. Between 1990 and 1999, there were 8 pregnancy-related deaths. High blood pressure, blood clots, and heavy bleeding were responsible for those deaths. Under the heading High Blood Pressure Risk, it states a woman with high blood pressure has a higher risk of complications. More importantly, it states that a woman who has never had high blood pressure can develop it during pregnancy. Under the section on abortion risk, it states that the overall risk of a woman dying as the direct result of a legal abortion is less than 1 per 100,000. It also states that the earlier in the pregnancy that the abortion is performed, the safer it is for the woman. A review of the stages of embryonic and fetal development would also indicate that if a woman does not want to face the higher risk of death associated with the complications of pregnancy, it is necessary for her safety to have an abortion as early as possible and not wait for further fetal development. The bill we are discussing today contradicts the information provided on the informed consent website. It takes the medical decision out of the individual woman's and her doctor's control and places it in the hands of legislators who would vote for this bill. this is a direct violation of the Constitution you just swore to uphold. Who among you would vote for this bill is prescient enough to know which pregnancies will lead to complications? Thank you very much for your time.
And thanks,
I do not, Donna.
I
approve of this bill.
Thank you for testifying. Next, we'll go to Pam Clemens.
I'm a lifelong Alaskan currently living in Senate District M, and I am opposed to Senate Bill 49, and as it's been said so eloquently by speakers before me, and not to be redundant, I oppose this legislation in part due to the fact that similar legislation has already been deemed unconstitutional, and I also believe that all Alaskans should be allowed the same access to health care, including abortion. Thank you for listening, and please listen to your constituents and vote no or oppose this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you for coming out to testify, Pam. Is it Elaine Lemorin?
Yes, sir. It's Elaine.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, it is Elaine Moran, and I live in Senate District D. And I'm here today to urge you and the Senate Judiciary Committee to vote no and oppose Senate Bill 49. I agree with everything that has been said, but I would like to express that this bill is blatantly biased against poor women and would not stop them from having safe, legal abortions, but rather open the door to the return of the back alley abortionists that Alaska put out of business in 1970, 4 years before Roe v. Wade. I know I am repeating, but I would like to state that I personally remember the horrors of that industry, because in 1970, during my senior year in high school, I was raped, and not only did I lose my virginity, I became pregnant. My mother and her friends tried every old wives' home remedy to get me to miscarry, from making me paint walls and pushing me off the ladder, making me run until my legs refused to hold me up, all the way to drinking awful tea concoctions that made me puke for days. Nothing worked. And finally, they found a woman who once worked for an OBGYN. She ran a daycare center and took me into a bedroom and opened a closet door from which an ironing board dropped out. I was told to lay on this and put my feet in the attached stirrups. I need not to go into the graphic details of what followed, but from what I remember, so many years ago, was the children playing on the other side of the door. After the first part of the procedure, I was sent home with a bottle of quinine and to take tablets on an hour basis. And after 12 hours, I was told that I would no longer be pregnant. This was not the case. Had I been to a real doctor, they would have known that this procedure would not work. As a 17-year-old who had been put through hell since being raped, I didn't understand, and in a moment of desperation, I swallowed the remaining quinine pills in an attempt to kill myself. Fortunately, I was found within minutes of dying, and I did miscarry 2 weeks later. I share this story because there are many ways that an unplanned and unwanted pregnancy can occur, and Bill 49 would take away a poor woman's ability to seek a safe, legal form from a properly trained professional, a form of an abortion from a properly trained professional, and not someone with an ironing board in their closet. I am thankful for our lawmakers in 1970, who were mostly Republicans, by the way, that put these crackpots out of business, but there is no more need for government involvement on this issue. Alaska has trusted doctors to work with their patients to determine what is best for them. Pregnancy decisions should be left up to a woman with the consult of her doctor, her family, and her faith. It's no one else's decision to make because no one else knows the shoes she's walking in. I beg you that you please listen to us on the Senate Bill 49 and vote no. Thank you for your time.
And thank you for your time coming before the committee. Greatly appreciated. Also, Albert Bowling.
My name is Albert Bowling. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, Albert.
Okay. Thank you for taking the time to listen to my comments. I'm here today speaking against our legislator's proposed bill, SB 49, which would limit the definition of what is medically necessary by disallowing any mental health evaluation of patients seeking abortions covered by Medicaid funds. Further, since I have suffered from a mental illness in the past, I can clearly state that when a person is confronted with an extreme crisis in their social situation, which could affect them in any number of unseen ways for years to come, their mental health is of significant consequence. I imagine the mental health issues of a woman suddenly finding herself in the midst of an unintentional and unwanted pregnancy to be momentous. Apparently, the state doesn't intend to interfere with the pregnancy choices of women on secure financial footing. And it seems the state seems to think the mental health issues of poor or otherwise disadvantaged women to be markedly inconsistent with those of other women. I'm afraid this is an argument I simply cannot buy into, and I see this as an attack on poor women, one of the most vulnerable segments of society found in every country on earth. Access to abortion in the U.S. is legal and constitutionally protected, and I find the state's attempt to deny the poorest of our sisters access to the same level of health care available to other citizens quite objectionable. One thing I'm fairly certain of is that when those depending on Medicaid for health care find themselves abandoned and forced to endure an unwanted pregnancy, well, I just think any normal person would conclude that situation most probably would generate some fairly significant mental issues. In closing, I strongly urge the legislature not to pass Senate Bill 49. Thank you.
Thank you, Albert. Appreciate your time to come testify. Susan, is it Pacillo?
No, my name is Susan Pacillo, and I am in Senate District K, and I absolutely oppose Senate Bill 49. I am going to stay away from the emotion because obviously you're never going to change my pro-choice mind as well as I'll never change anyone's pro-birth mind. I'm going to appeal on your sense of what's right according to the Alaska State Constitution. And if this bill were to pass, you'd spend an awful lot of money in court fighting it when you could be spending that money on birth control or education or even money to feed poor children. I just think it's a waste of time and money. The definition of insanity is to continue to keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result. And I don't know how many times it's going to be brought before the Senate, the House, the people of Alaska, but our Constitution states that funding for poor women for abortion services is required. That's my two cents. Thank you.
Thanks, Susan. Thank you very much. We have Miriam Landau.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Miriam Landau. And this is not the first time I've had the opportunity to testify on this particular issue. I testified against HB 363 last year, wrote comments against the proposed regulation changes in July, and now I'm here again to urge this committee to oppose SB 49. The definition of medically necessary has already been decided by our Constitution and subsequent court decisions. And this is really a question for me of equal access, which is a basic right protected by our Constitution. And as a safe and legal medical procedure, abortion should not be singled out and treated differently than any other medical procedures. And as we saw last week in a discussion back and forth between the experts and our legislators about what should be included in the list and what shouldn't, politicians really aren't the best people to be making these decisions, and they should be staying out of our exam rooms. In cases where a woman's health is at risk, it should really remain up to women and their doctors to make that decision. I, as a woman, hope to always be in control of my reproductive system, and I hope that you guys agree. And thank you so much for the chance to testify, and I urge you to oppose Senate Bill 49.
Thank you for taking the time to come out and testify. I'm going to switch up and go up to Fairbanks. Rhonda Widener, are you there? Rhonda, can you hear us?
Sorry. All right. Am I live now, Mr.
Chair? Now we can hear you. Thank you.
All right. I'm Rhonda Widener. I'm actually in your district, District 2. And I feel very strongly about this issue. This is the first time I've ever testified and been active in something like this. So excuse me if I'm a little bit nervous, but I absolutely oppose Senate Bill 49 for a variety of reasons. The biggest reason is because I'm a working mother. I have a career. I have an education. I'm married. If I found myself unexpectedly pregnant tomorrow, I would have a difficult time paying for childcare and paying for my astronomical fuel bill. And I think that that's where your resources should be at this time, worrying about my energy expenses. So, you know, and just on the fact of abortion and just being a woman in general, I have health insurance. I pay for it. I don't qualify for Medicaid by a long shot. I have a difficult time obtaining family planning resources with the medical care that I have. I have a difficult time obtaining annual appointments with my OBGYN. I have a difficult time filling my prescription birth control on occasion here just because our medical resources are already limited. And again, it's just by virtue of being in Fairbanks that those things are limited. I can't imagine that if with my resources that I have, if I'm limited, I can't imagine being a low-income woman in the state of Alaska and relying on Medicaid. I just think it's wrong for us to further interfere with the medical decisions that a woman makes with her doctor. I don't think abortion is a something that a woman would come to that choice easily and should be absolutely left between her and her medical provider. Our elected officials should not be interfering and trying to define what is necessary and what's not. I also don't think that by passing this, anybody would save a dime. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Rhonda. I have several off-net calls that I'm going to go to, and then I'm going to ask some people in the room here if there's time constraints. So we have, let's see, here we go. Clover Simon, name I recognize, is off-net. Are you still on, Clover?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you for calling in.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Clover Simon, for the record, and I'm testifying as a private citizen today. It's probably no surprise that I'm testifying against Senate Bill 49. As you know, the issue of abortion is highly divisive in the public sphere, and I've had conversations, I think, with all of you that are present there in the committee about how we disagree on the issue of abortion. But really, what we're doing here is talking about who's paying for abortion. And over the years, the legislature has made many attempts, and that has been gone through in detail by my friends at Planned Parenthood. And SB 49 is just yet another version to narrow the circumstances in which a poor woman can access abortion. And what we know, you know, globally and across the United States is that when we try and restrict abortion, we actually end up pushing the rates higher. So if you look at countries that have the most restrictions on abortion, they also have the highest rates of abortion. Of course, those are, in many cases, illegal abortions. And we've had some poignant testimony today about the issues involved with women seeking abortion that is not done by a qualified provider. If we really want to reduce abortion in Alaska, we have to look at the bigger picture, and we really need to take a look at what we're doing to help women and men across Alaska plan their families. We do not do a good job here of providing easy access to birth control, as a previous caller mentioned. Even for folks that have insurance and the ability to access a pharmacy, it's difficult sometimes to make that monthly prescription. So we have an opportunity in Alaska. I would really urge the committee to take some time to look at what our options are in terms of providing family planning services more widely available. We have a very small population. For low-income citizens under 250% of the federal poverty level, there's a 90-10 match program through Medicaid, which we could be taking advantage of, but we currently aren't. It would be great if we could put something like that into effect and really begin to look at what we can do to make sure that the children that are born in Alaska are wanted and are coming into a family that's prepared to raise them the best that they can. And, you know, as we know, I mean, I hold the same opinion as Planned Parenthood in the constitutionality of this bill. I do believe that it's unconstitutional, and I'm hoping that we can alleviate the need to waste more state money on lawsuits when we could really be spending that money on providing birth control services and education to people across Alaska so that we can really try and reduce the number of abortions. And really, thank you for taking the time to hear the testimony today.
Thank you, Clover. And I've got, is it Kim McClintock online as well?
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
For the record, my name is Kim McClintock, and I live in Senate District L, and I'm here today to urge the Senate Judiciary to vote no on Senate Bill 49. I was born and raised in Alaska, and I'm currently getting my master's in public health at Tulane University in New Orleans. Alaska is my home, and I'm proud to say that I am still an Alaskan voter, and I have been for my entire adult life. And I plan on bringing the skills that I'm getting here at school back home with me after I graduate. So I agree with much of what has been said before me. I believe that we should let doctors determine what is medically necessary. While politicians may have good intentions, I don't think that they have a place in deciding what is medically necessary for women. Essentially, I believe that Senate Bill 49 is trying to create two classes of women, and I don't believe it's what Alaska is about, and I believe that that is wrong. I understand that perhaps the goal of this bill is to reduce abortions in Alaska, but as was just stated before me, limiting access is not the way to accomplish this. If you really want to reduce abortions, then you need to focus on reducing the need for abortion, which means making sure that all women have access to affordable family planning. No woman wants to be faced with an unintended pregnancy, and I believe that no woman uses abortion as birth control. I would much rather see our state spend this time, energy, and our tax dollars on giving Alaskan women and families the tools that they need to plan and lead healthy lives. So, in closing, please, I urge you to vote no on Senate Bill 49. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in. Appreciate you taking your time. Is there anybody in the room that's under time constraint and cannot come back at this point? Why don't you come on forward and identify yourself, and we'll let you go ahead and get your testimony back here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Lisa Egan Lagerquist. I'm from Senate District B, and I'm here like every other single person who has talked today to urge you to vote no and oppose Senate Bill 49. I'm a former teacher at the high school here. I'm a professional in the community, and I'm a mother of two small children. So I've been through two pregnancies, and I've been through raising small children. And let me tell you, this can have adverse effects on someone's mental health. So I heard a lot in the paper about the first hearings, a termination could cause harmful effects on a woman's mental health. But let's not forget, having a child or being pregnant is no easy thing either. Basically, I just agree with what everyone else has said. A medical decision should be between a doctor and a woman. No one else should be involved. Women are smart and capable. I am feeling that a lot of this is about taking power away from women and their right to make decisions, and that's not right. Doctors are capable. They go to med school. They are capable of knowing what is medical necessary and not. I don't think we should be questioning doctors. And one, two, three. That's, I don't want to take any more time. So again, I urge you to oppose this and vote no and spend your time on more important things. Thank you.
Thank you for coming to testify in front of the committee. And I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Where? Mr. Chair, I think you've got another speaker.
Okay. And I've got a couple that are online, but I just don't know where. Show me where here.
I will.
Senator,
thank you.
Come on.
Can I come forward?
Yes, please do.
Thank you. You know I'm not in town to testify on this bill. I came because of the 100-year celebration of the state legislature. But since I'm here in the building, I thought it would be wise if I came by. Mm-hmm. And first of all, I want to thank you for your concern about the medical necessary, because that's an issue that we've been trying to deal with for quite some time. But I chaired Health and Social Service Committee for quite a few years, and I wanted to figure out if I needed to introduce a bill, never could come up with the information I felt that we need. And I do know you. I believe that you are trying to do the right thing. I see that this bill was just introduced the 15th of February. I see that now there's a CS, and so you made some changes in this bill, but I don't think a bill is what's necessary. And I'm not telling you not to vote yes or no. What I'm asking you to do is that probably this bill need to be withdrawn, because the discussion need to take place, but it does not need to take place in the form of a bill. Because the department has its responsibility. I know Medicaid says we got Medicaid and we're supposed to pay for those marches that are medically necessary, but no one never want to define exactly what it is. And I do believe that it's a decision that should be determined by a woman and her doctor. I do believe that. But have the doctors been here to the table talking about this bill? Is the department giving its issue on this bill? Because I've gone to them over and over and over for information, and they have not been able to provide for me. And you will not get it within these 90 days, the 45 days that you have left for the session, or however many days that you have, to have a bill that you think that you could pass and not have a problem with it being challenged by the courts. It will be. It will be. I know you've made some changes here. I know that you mean well, but I do believe that the discussion needs to take place someplace else. And I'm just asking, I'm not telling you. I'm just asking that you would consider withdrawing the bill and pulling the people in the room that would deal with this issue. And maybe we could come back with some real clear understanding exactly what it means to say, yeah, medical necessary, and therefore we will be paying for that. So I won't take up any more of your time.
Senator, I'm going to take your words to heart. I probably won't withdraw the bill, but I will continue the conversation. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
I got in the Fairbanks LIO, I've got Pamela Samash as well, who is also under some time constraint. So, Pamela.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you just fine.
Oh, hello there. Thank you, Senator Coghill, and everybody for serving our community and listening to our testimony today. I would encourage you to please vote yes on Senator Bill 49. I just wanted to testify that the government has a very important job, and that is to protect the public by representing us and keeping us safe. And that means keeping all of us safe at all stages of life. This has been proven when instances occur, such as the harm or murder of a pregnant woman. The criminal is persecuted for harming not one person, but two. Please remember that as you decide on this bill. There are two living people involved in this decision. If you have access, I'd like you to please download www.silentscreen.org. It's a real-life video during an abortion. This child is the age that our child are aborted here in Alaska. This is the very people that you are deciding, or these are the very people that you are deciding on today. Again, government's job is to protect the public. This is an extremely important decision you're about to make. Remember that there are two lives at stake. Regarding the concerns of emotional distress and where that fits in with this bill, I'd like to just let you know that I myself had faced an unplanned pregnancy and I was absolutely terrified. And when I went to Planned Parenthood, there was no education process. They wouldn't even allow ultrasounds of the baby. So I'm not sure what education process that they're talking about, but they wouldn't even let people see their babies. So I would like that to go on record. Please stick to your guns on this. I agree with this bill. Our taxes should not be paying for the death of children unless it is a medical emergency to the mother. Thank you so much. Pamela Samash, Nanana, District 38.
Thank you, Pamela. Appreciate it. And one last one in Fairbanks is Jean James there.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, barely.
My name is Jean James, Jean Wadlin James, and I live in Alaska Senate District C. I've lived here since 1982, and I'm a mother and a grandmother. I also grew up during the time that all abortions were illegal. It didn't stop them. It only made it worse for everyone. Backroom abortions, coat hangers, and we heard a horrific example. Lots of women were maimed, and in countries with liberal abortion laws, easy access to birth control, and excellent sex education have the lowest abortion rates, which are lower than the U.S. I strongly believe that the decision of a medically necessary abortion is a physician's decision and not the legislature's. Unfortunately, events are never black and white, and this type of determination should be made by a medical doctor and not by a legislative mandate. Mandates can be misinterpreted, circumstances can change with advances in medicine, etc. I also find it really ironic that people who do not want government in their lives can support this bill. I strongly urge you to oppose Senate Bill 49 and vote no. I think, as mentioned earlier, I think it's important to focus on options that reduce the number and the need for abortions, such as improved access to birth control and excellent sex education that includes more than just abstinence, and focusing on more pressing issues that are very important to all of us: energy, air pollution, the economy, and education. And as a footnote, I'm the widow of a wonderful man, William Bill James, M.D., who practiced pediatrics and family medicine in Alaska since 1958, both private and with the Public Health Service. He had lots of extensive experience, and I know that he, as a physician, would have opposed Senate Bill 49. Thank you.
Thank you for taking time to come out, Jean. Appreciate it. Is there anybody in here that cannot come back at another hearing tomorrow? All right, I've got two. So, young lady, why don't you come on up and let's do that. I'm going to run the meeting over just a few minutes so I can get Senator Dyson's bill on the table. He can explain it to us for a few minutes. But I wanted to get these last two before we get to that, all right? Thank you,
young lady. Thank you. My name is Heather Brandon. I live in Juneau, which I guess is Senate District P. I have a 19-month-old son at home, and you can see that I'm pregnant and I'm due rather soon. I'm opposed. Last year, a woman named Savita in Ireland died because doctors did not choose to be pronounced by law enforcement or judges. Rather than face that scrutiny, the doctors let Savita die. Will an Alaska woman have to die before the Alaska State Legislature understands that you are not qualified to determine when a procedure is medically necessary? Just as women don't turn to politicians for advice about mammograms or prenatal care or cancer treatment, Politicians should not be involved in a woman's personal medical decisions about her pregnancy. The Supreme Court has already said twice that the Alaska Constitution protects low-income women's equal access to all of their pregnancy options, including safe and legal abortions. Not only is Senate Bill 49 ignoring the Supreme Court, but this bill would prevent access to critically needed health care, but only for poor women. You should not target a demographic that doesn't have the fiscal means to fight for their rights. Pregnancy decisions are deeply personal. Politicians and bureaucrats should not attempt to make that decision for any woman or for me. And you should not pretend to be medical experts. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. And young man? I say young because we're all young, right?
Thank you. I think I've got a few years on you, Senator. Hi.
Just identify yourself.
My name is Phil Stewart. Dennis Egan is my senator. Lady and gentlemen, I'm appalled that this legislation is even being considered. Equal opportunity under the laws of the United States and Alaska is mandated to all women to make their own health and reproductive choices. However, that opportunity simply does not exist without the necessary resources to pursue that opportunity. And Senate Bill 49 would deny those resources and opportunity to those who need them most. Passage and enactment of Senate Bill 49 will, by forcing poor women to bear and raise children that they can't afford, children possibly born of incest or rape, condemn those women, those children, and their children's children to continuing poverty. Now, we all know that should SB 49 be enacted, it will be in violation of the state constitution and will end up before the Supreme Court anyway. Senate Bill 49 is cruel, it's wrong, and I believe merely a grandstanding ploy to appeal to a small but vocal voting bloc. You all need to quit wasting all our time and get on to better business. Drop this bill like a hot rock. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I want you to know that I take great offense at you saying that I'm grandstanding.
Well, I believe that you may have very, very profound moral issues with this.
No, I have human rights issues.
I do too.
Right.
I do too.
Okay, but I feel insulted. I treat your opinions with respect. I'd just as soon you did mine and realize that mine are deeply held because I care about all kinds of humans. I've helped raise nearly 24 kids that aren't my own and adopted some my family has. And I react to your saying that I'm grandstanding.
Well, I'm sorry if you take it that personally, Senator, but there are lots of other people in the political realm that do in fact grandstand to specific voting blocks.
I understand.
And
thank
I'm,
you.
I apologize to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
I didn't realize that you have been so instrumental in the raising of so many kids. And I do praise you and commend you for that.
Well, and for both of you and for all listening, it's easy to impugn the motive of why anybody would stand on one side or the other of this issue. It's not been my practice to impugn anybody's motive, and I would encourage you not to, but as you can see, it always hits our button. But anyway, thank you for testifying.
There are many buttons that are yes. being hit.
Yeah. What I'm gonna
thank
do,
you for your time, and I do apologize again, Senator.
Thank you very much. Senator Dyson, I can give you some moments, and what I'm going to do is I'm not going to close public testimony. I'm going to roll it over till we're going to continue on tomorrow, so those of you who can show up tomorrow, and especially those online, and I know I have ACLU online as well. If you want to call in tomorrow, I wanted to make sure I had as much time as I could for those who are calling in. Excuse me.
I think we need to
get it wrong. Don't come over and spoke. Interruption there. I needed to make sure that we get that squared away. I am going to run the meeting over the 3 o'clock hour by about probably 8 to 10 minutes, 10 minutes on the outside. But just to explain to those who did call in, it was not my intention to cut off public testimony, but we ran out of time, and I I said I was going to have another bill brought before us here, and I just want it to be introduced, and that we can deal with it tomorrow as well, all right? So my apologies for having to put my foot down, but time has come that we need to move forward rapidly. So, Senator Dyson, you have a bill, and just please introduce it to us.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for hearing this bill. Senate Bill 56, and what it does is it takes a simple possession of Schedule 1 or Schedule 2 drugs and reduces it from automatically being a Class C felony to being a Class A misdemeanor. And it makes it clear in the bill that if small quantities, no evidence of any intent to distribute, and no harm, like the user didn't cause any accidents, domestic violence, or anything like that. And we are filling our jails and our courts with people who have done no harm. I think that using these addictive drugs is a bad behavior, but it doesn't raise, in my view, to the level of a felony. We're spending somewhere between $55,000 and about $70,000 per year for people that we incarcerate. The Commissioner of Corrections says that if we keep doing it at the rate we are, we're going to have to build another Goose Creek prison at just something over $250 million, and we can't afford it. There's a movement in our country to be smart on crime, you know, protect public safety, differentiate between the people we're afraid of and those we're mad at. And this is a small step, as is your bill, Mr. Chairman, to reduce the overcriminalization and the tremendous cost we have in it. And I really don't have much more to say today. We can go into the sexual analysis and all that the next time the bill's up.
The question that came to my mind when I first heard the introduction of this is, we have talked so many times about gateway crime issues and great gateway drug issues. It gets my concern right up. As you bring this back before us, I would ask you to help me answer that question on, I don't want to have substances that become in the realm of scoff law. And so that's going to be one of the first questions. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it's an unwarranted concern. A Class A misdemeanor can be up to a year in jail and $10,000, and that certainly sends a signal that this is antisocial, a dangerous activity, and so on. And the bill also says if you get busted three times on it, it's a felony.
Okay.
And it doesn't require, as you heard, the impaneling of a grand jury, doesn't require all of the costs that go with that laborious process. And hopefully we lose nothing, but we gain a lot more efficient use of the public resources. Anyways, okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That was my first concern. Thank you for sending, getting it before us. My apologies for running you tight on time. My apologies for those who came to testify. We ran tight on time. My intention is not to pass out the bill until we've exhausted our opportunity for public comment. Obviously, Planned Parenthood came here to do some, at least their professional testimony, for which I'm grateful up to a point. And I must confess, I disagree with them, but I understand that. I will be glad for any other input that you want to give to us based on some of the testimony. My intention is to have other testimony that will be more headed towards the favorable side of this bill, if I can get it. But if I can't, then we'll take your consideration very seriously. And with that, we are going to adjourn this committee today at, it's actually 3:04.
Good job, John.